We all have a level to which we believe we deserve to achieve in life. If we don't believe we deserve it, whether it be in your health, your relationship, your career, you will not go after it. Or if you do go after it and you get it and you don't believe you deserve it, you will give it away.
Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Wherever you go, there you are. My mother-in-law had that written on a post-it note on our kitchen bulletin board, and it became a concept that I embraced because I've seen it play out in my own life as well as in the lives of my clients. And what it means is that we are driven as humans by unconscious patterns of belief that prevent us from actually accomplishing what we consciously set out to do. You're likely not aware of it. You might find yourself saying, I can't believe I'm in the same spot again, or I can't believe I've recreated the same bad relationship I had before, or for all my success, why am I still broke? Several years ago, I heard Pat Pearson speak at a retreat for entrepreneurs. Her description of the common ways we as humans sabotage our own success hit directly to my core. She's talking to me, I thought, in that moment. Since then, not only have I made Stop Self-Sabotage required reading for all of my clients, but I've also hosted Pat in many communities so that others can hear her message. So whether you don't achieve the goals you set, feel like an imposter in your role, or notice that as soon as money comes in, it goes out twice as fast, you may need to look at how much you are allowing yourself to deserve. Get ready for a new level of self-awareness and open up to new tools for you to make different choices that will create a vastly different result in your life and business through this republished episode of an interview with Pat Pearson that we originally had in 2021. Enjoy, my friends. So, Pat, it is my pleasure to welcome you to Life After Corporate.
Hey, my pleasure, Devin. Good wishes to you with this podcast and keep helping people. Really, it gives you great energy and a great focus in life. So you're to be much congratulated for doing that.
Thank you, Pat.
Wow. And what a time to do it. My goodness. Wow.
I know.
Even if they were still working, it was life after corporate. You know,
it was life. Yes.
Because their life in corporate changed remarkably. And I doubt that we'll ever go back, frankly. I think that some of these changes have been permanently etched. And not all bad by any estimation. So
I agree with you. I think some women and women have been the majority, have taken the majority of losses in this recession, in this pandemic. And for some, there will be no going back to corporate. You know, they will be left up to their own resources to create something that they can control and generates revenue. So that's our mission in Life After Corporate, is to show you step by step how you do that and how you get out of your own way in the process. And that's why it was so important for me to invite you here today to speak with our listeners, because there's nothing that holds us back, really. You can be anything you want to be. You can do anything you want to do, as long as you're willing to put in the work to overcome things like self-sabotage and increase your deserve level and move out all of those subconscious barriers to success. So I remember the very first time we met and I heard you speak. I think it was at the EBW retreat, the Empowering a Billion Women retreat. And I was completely blown away by the insights you were dropping on us at that event, and bought the book, consumed it, underlined it, wrote in the margins, did the exercises. And literally it just, my eyes were open. It made a difference in my life on how I was getting in my own way. So let's help our listeners understand their own patterns of self-sabotage by understanding, you know, how do you define self-sabotage, Pat? What does it mean in your perspective?
Yeah, sure, Deb. First of all, let me honor you in saying the amount of effort you put in, you know, like you said, you bought the book. Thank you so much. You read it. Thank you again. You used it. Thank you again. And you applied it to your life. I can't tell you how many of the thousands and thousands of people I've talked to have done maybe the first two, but you know, it's the application, isn't it? It's the making it your own that sings the song. And you were a wonderful soprano ringing out in the night, if I might carry that metaphor. But
absolutely.
So, yeah. So self-sabotage is the way that we trip ourselves up as we're racing to the finish line. It's the ways that we unconsciously and consciously make sure we don't get what we say we most want. Now, why in the world would we do that? It makes no sense. However, we do it all the time. We do it with our diets. We do it with our careers. We do it with our choices about exercise or not exercise. We do it in our lives. We do it in our relationships. We do it in our health. We do it in our career. So the limitation that we self-impose, it's our own internal glass ceiling. Nobody puts it there but us. It's not because your mother said bad things to you. It's not because your husband and you had a fight. It's not because of COVID. It's not because of the environment or the economy. It's because we stop ourselves. That's essentially what I'm talking about.
So why do we do that, Pat? Why do we stop ourselves, you know, and why has this become a lifelong practice of yours to help people get out of their own way?
Well, let me answer that second part of that question first. I was a practicing therapist in Dallas for many, many years. And what I kept noticing is very bright, very achievement-oriented, smart, lovely, well-educated people would come into my practice, and over again, they would hit a place in themselves in which they couldn't go past. They kept repeating, and they might repeat it in different forms. It might be in a relationship that they'd get in one, it wouldn't work, and then 8 months later, they'd be in another one that wouldn't work. Or it might be in their inability to ask and to move up the corporate ladder or to really make the money they wanted to in their home-based business or to get healthy, to lose the weight and keep it off that they truly wanted. We all have some degree of this, okay? Whether you're rich or poor, you know, happy or unhappy, bright or not bright, you are going to run into self-sabotage. Why? Because it's unconscious. It's part of what I call your deserved level. We all have a level to which we believe we deserve to achieve in life. If we don't believe we deserve it, whether it be in your health, your relationship, your career, you will not go after it. Or if you do go after it and you get it and you don't believe you deserve it, you will give it away. To get within that comfort zone that we all have inside of us. So self-sabotage becomes the thermostat that we set to keep us at the temperature that we feel comfortable.
That is so, so rich and so visual, right? So the internal glass ceiling, I think our listeners probably can identify at least one area in their lives where maybe they're not allowing themselves to receive as much as they want because inside they don't deserve it. So where does this deserve barometer, this deserve level come from?
Well, it comes from, you know, it certainly comes from inside of us. There are four qualities or four psychological realities I talk about that create what you believe you deserve. They are your belief system, you know, positive and negative about getting what you want. We have beliefs, both positive and negative, about any goal we set. Your level of self-esteem, your level of self-confidence, and then permission from your past. Those four components go together to create this reality I've dubbed your deserve level. And we all have an intuitive feeling about that, you know, and we hear people say things about it. It's interesting because when I'm watching movies, I'll hear someone say, well, you deserve that. And it's an interesting statement because almost always in that context, it's you deserve something good for yourself. But you could also hear it in the negative context, like you've been bad, so you deserve to be punished. But without any kind of clear definition of what deserve is, but we all have an idea. We have a sense of that. You know, we have a sense of what we deserve. And most of the time, we don't go past our limits. We go up to our limits and then we back away. And that's the functionality of self-sabotage. It pulls us away from breaking through our limits. My work for over 30 years has been predominantly to help people break through those limits, to up their deserve level, and then to create the support around them to keep it there and even to go higher, like you did with your success. Tell your story about that, Deb. That's a fact, as I have you on my website, people will see you as a star of using the material. Tell them what happened to you.
Yeah. Well, for me, there's no stone left unturned, Pat. You know, you get to a certain age where it's like any barrier is no good barrier. So I just have an openness and a willingness to do whatever it takes to bust out of these unconscious patterns. I forget some of the details of the story, but what I remember was that I took your information, I applied it in my own life. I had been asked to speak to about 50 women leaders in tech in a workshop format, and I created a talk largely based on your content and some of my own work called Women's Success and Self-Sabotage. And they were blown away. And in that, so at the time, I was also doing a lot of leadership coaching. And in that one talk, I generated, I would say all told, probably 30 new client relationships. It was quite extraordinary how when, and I'm sure the same will happen to our listeners, and they'll want to get the book and want to listen to your podcast, because once you embrace that there is this inner barrier that up until now you haven't been aware of, and yet you have infinite power to control and move beyond, then it's like the heavens open up and the angels sing, right? And so that's well, what happened to me. And I applied it to my own life. All I did was share it with other people, gave you full credit, and people were signing up to coach. And it was a beautiful thing to be able to support people in that way.
And I think the quote on my website, I haven't seen it in a while, was that your income went up 35%, something like that, in the next 6 months, which is what we found, by way. What we found is, in all the years I've been doing this around the country and with groups and companies, what we found is the people who apply it and have a breakthrough, which means you learn something new and you keep applying it over time. You don't just learn it and shut the book and forget it. They saw somewhere between a 25% for every new thing they learned. So if they learned two new things and applied it, 50%. So we saw this exponential going up in terms of success, which makes sense because you are your business. There's no difference between you, how you feel, and your business. You're depressed, so is your business. You're upset, you're angry, so is your business. You're happy, you're on tune to make your life where you want it to be, so is your business. So it's not just a nice idea to take care of yourself emotionally. It is critical to the outcomes you want.
It's necessary for your business. And I have an update for you. So last year during the pandemic, I literally doubled my revenue.
Well, woohoo!
And we're going to try and do it again this year. So,
of course you are.
Yeah.
And you will.
And that's why it's so important, because, you know, no money, no mission. You don't get to make an impact with your work if you can't earn enough revenue to feed back into the business and to pay yourself well so that you can take care of yourself. So it feels good. So you're happy. So One of the things that you mentioned in the book was the difference between self-esteem and self-confidence. And I get that question a lot from my clients. Can you give us some insight in how you define the difference between self-esteem and self-confidence?
Yes. Yeah, of course. Well, and you know, and I find that people tend to throw those into the same bucket, you know, not intentionally. They know it's two different words, but they kind of think if you have one, you automatically have the other, which is not the case. Self-esteem, as I define it, is created by unconscious acknowledgement for who you are as a human being, because you're a good, lovable, likable human being. That creates self-esteem, okay? And it's given to you as you grow up, obviously, hugs, kisses, approval from your parents. It's given to you by yourself. That's the whole, you know, the new word, of course, now out there is self-care. That's essentially loving yourself enough to care for yourself, which is self-esteem building. It's given to you by your primary partner in life and friends and, you know, anybody who likes you, loves you, and unconditionally, that's the key word, without you doing anything, creating anything, developing anything, gives you that acknowledgement. That creates self-esteem. Okay. Mm-hmm. Self-confidence, on the other hand, is created by conditional acknowledgement for performance. You do a great podcast and you get all this feedback from people who listen to you, Deb, and they say, hey, great podcast. I loved it. You were great. Or, you know, when you're growing up, you get an A on your biology test. You make a great sale and or you do something that you create something, you know, art that you feel good about. So you do something to make it happen. Confidence is based on doing. Esteem is based on being. So you can have a person with high self-esteem and low self-confidence, or vice versa, high self-confidence and low self-esteem. And whoever that person is, those people are, will perform and will live in different ways from each other. So one of the ways for your listeners, and this is just real easy to do, is to think about, I'm going to give you a little quiz here in a second, but first of all, let me tell you about me. I think if you give a story, it's helpful. I grew up in Missouri. Columbia, Missouri, to be exact. And every summer I would get out there and I would have my little red wagon and I would sell my comic books. And my dad, who is a national book salesman, would come by and he'd go, "Atta girl, Pat, chip off the old block. You sell those comic books." and I knew if I was selling my comic books, picking up my room and getting A's, my dad would be happy with me. Okay. I wasn't so sure he'd love me or be happy with me if I got an F. So I knew if I performed, my dad would acknowledge me and be proud. So that built some self-confidence, right? From my mom seemed to love me no matter what I did. I could sit in my room, eat M&Ms all day, watch, you know, senseless TV and be totally unproductive. And my mother loved me. So from my mom, I developed some self-esteem. Well, I had some levels of both of those qualities going in my life. However, because I didn't feel I got a lot of self-esteem from my dad, I felt I had to earn men's approval by doing things for them. So in college, I did their homework. I, you know, wrote their term papers. Cleaned their room. I did all kinds of stuff to get them to, quote, love me. So what I tried to do is use my confidence to build my esteem. And what I found out is this, through many years of therapy, I might say, is that these are two very different channels. You can't use one to make up for your lack in the other. You've got to address each one. So let me give you a quick quiz here for you and anybody else here. Give yourself a rating in terms of 1 to 10, 10 being the highest, 1 being the lowest, in terms of self-esteem. How loved and liked and approved of do you feel right now? Of course, this can change, but right now, how do you feel loved, approved of, cared about? Do you have someone who tells you that? Are you feeling in that high you know, in that self-esteem. From 1 to 10, 10 being the highest. That's human being. That's your being. Then how do you feel about your ability to produce, to do whatever it is that's important to you right now, whether it's write a book, create a new source of income, do something that you want to do, do a podcast like you're doing, and make it successful. 1 to 10. 10 being the highest, 1 being the lowest. But just, as you're listening here, just easily go in your head, give yourself a rating. You need both, obviously. But whatever area is the lowest is the one that bugs you the most. That's the one that when you're walking around your house or doing, I don't know, you know, taking a shower or whatever, and you're just thinking, that's the area you're going to go to, because there's a need within all of us to finish our unfinished business, to correct and balance that which we feel unbalanced.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I was thinking, I was like, my upbringing was very similar to yours, except I don't think I got the unconditional positive regard from my mother. I think it was from my great grandmother who loved the bejesus out of me. But, you know, I think that at different points in my life, like my self-esteem is really high right now. Of course, I've got a loving man in my life. I've got great friends. I've learned to love myself. I've practiced good self-care. Sometimes I fall off the wagon. And that's the only reason why I would give myself some lower marks. And confidence is really, really high unless I'm doing something brand new or I'm pushing out of that. So I have a deserved level. I've achieved that. And now I'm setting it even higher. So then I think, does the confidence barometer, you know, kind of bounce up and down depending on if you're stretching yourself in new areas?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Anytime you take on something new, all right, whatever the new is, and it could be learning how to cook. It doesn't have to be, you know, productive. I mean, it can, a lot of people during this COVID time have taken on new challenges, like writing or, you know, learning a language. Whatever it is that is new for you, that you haven't accomplished before, that you don't have in your wheelhouse, yes, your confidence will be lower in that area until you have enough, you know, hours put in to feel like, hey, I got some of this. I got it.
Yeah, exactly. And very relevant for the listeners of this podcast, right? Who are successful women leaders in business, successful in the corporate world or in nonprofit or education. And then they make the leap to starting their own business. And suddenly it's like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm not sure anyone would hire me. And all the success and experience they've attained up until this point in time, the confidence kind of goes from 10 to 2. So yeah. It makes total sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then what needs to happen if they're doing that, and kudos to them that they're doing that, is that they need to then find ways to do small tasks and reward. Okay.
Tell us more about that.
Yeah. For someone who's been really successful in one area, that's very, very difficult to do. Why? Because they're used to having a big portfolio of themselves. You know, they're used to being successful. They're used to calling the shots. They're used to being the top dog or the higher up on the platform dog. And now they're just beginning to rebuild. So it's a whole nother psychological construct, which basically means, you know, you take small tasks that are doable, that are achievable, and you reward yourself upon completion of those tasks, whatever the tasks happen to be. I have no more than 4 or 5 things on my to-do list every day. No more than that. Because what I used to do is have a, you know, 8,000 page to-do list and then just want to lay down.
So, right, right.
I don't do that to myself anymore. 4 or 5 critical things, and one of them has to be exercise. So 4 or 5 critical things a day for me to get done. And I don't get them all done, you know, but mm-hmm. I get the majority of them done. And even if I don't get one of them done, I celebrate the 3 or 4 I did get done.
And how do you celebrate?
I talk to my fiance about it and I say, I'm so proud that we got this, or I got this, or mm-hmm. maybe together we got these things done today. I talk about it. you know, at dinner usually. And then I'm always open for a hug or an atta girl or good for you, because you need that reaffirmation of your activity after you've done it. I mean, even in this COVID time, if it's just cleaning your house, it's still important, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever it is you decide is important, then that goes on the list and you celebrate verbally. If you like to have a glass of wine, great. Whatever it is that you do to celebrate, you know?
Yeah, we do fist bumps at dinner. You know, we share about our day and what we accomplished. And so we have these little fist bumps and then we go,
yeah.
That's our little thing. So let's talk about what happens when you hit your deserve level. How do we identify our pattern of self-sabotage?
Well, it's going to be a consistent and repetitive inability to get more of what you want.
Now, in the book, you identify the 5 patterns of self-sabotage. Can you share at least some of them with us?
Yeah, those are strategies. Those are some of the strategies that you would sabotage yourself with. Fatal flaw is one of them. Fatal flaw basically means that it's kind of a catch-all one. Whatever you would do that would over and over again get in your way, whether it be perfectionism, an anger racket, narcissism, whatever. I mean, there's a whole category, untreated depression. So there's a whole category of that. There's also one called resignation, which means I give up before I really start. I come up with an idea to write a book, let's say. And then I go, oh my gosh, nobody's buying books. Nobody's interested. The only person who'll buy it's my mother. Why am I even doing this? So I talk myself out of it before I start. Resignation is one sabotage strategy. The other sabotage strategy, another one is called throwing it away. That means you get it. You get what you say you want. You get the guy, you get the new job, you get the health goal that you wanted. And now, because you feel like you've gotten more than you deserve, you throw it away. And several years ago, I was interviewed, even the great Oprah does this. You know, I was interviewed by Access Hollywood when Oprah had put on 50 pounds and had not revealed it. This was a while back. And they asked me, you know, what do you think she's doing? I said, well, I think she's self-sabotaging. And we talked about it. And then she came out with a statement that said, I will never diet again until I understand the psychological reasons why I can't keep this weight off. Because she'd lose it, she'd put it back on. Lose it, put it back on. That's what you're looking at. So that's throwing, you get it and you throw it away. You know, you get the guy who's fabulous, then you find everything is wrong with him and you break up. So denial. Denial basically means that you deny that there's a problem. You know, you just put your head in the sand and just constantly don't look at the reality of what you're doing. This is why self-sabotage is, people we love who are sabotaging themselves is such a painful reality for many of us, because we see what they can't see. We see our father who's, you know, 75 pounds overweight and won't get out of the chair to walk. We see our best friend who marries the wrong guy, you know, repeatedly, wrong kind of guy. We see something, but the person themselves is in denial. Obviously, this has implications for alcoholism, drug addiction, all that kind of stuff. The other thing is settling for less, which is basically that you get close and you settle for less. You give up your pursuit. You're on the track. You know, I have a little bit of that going on with weight. I get close to my goal and then I think, oh, well, that's close enough. You know, I can, you know, have a couple margaritas here and there. So it's just a process by which we con ourselves.
It's when your goal conflicts with your reward system and then there's a margarita at the end of the day to reward yourself.
Right, right. So well, that's certainly possible. For sure.
Well, you know, I've seen each of these in my clients, especially fatal flaw, right? So perfectionism, procrastination is something that, you know, when you're doing something uncomfortable and you're stepping outside of your comfort zone, you're not feeling entirely confident about it, it's easy to fall prey to the need to having everything be perfect, you know, and it's like sharpening your pencils, making sure your website is perfect, making sure you've got a gorgeous logo. Meanwhile, you don't have a client yet and you haven't sold anything.
Right. Right.
The resignation is, you know, they get so close, right? So they get so close and then they'll abandon the process right when they're about to hit the breakthrough. Yeah. And
there's a difference here, Deb. Let me interrupt you there for a second.
Sure.
The resignation is that they don't get started. They give up before they start.
Right.
The settling for less is what I call a pre-achievement sabotage. They get right up to the threshold of them having a breakthrough, of them getting what they want, in whatever category they're focused in. That's when they get uncomfortable. That's when they trip themselves up. So there's pre-achievement sabotage, and then there's post-achievement sabotage. So that's the timing factor of self-sabotage.
Got it. And the post-achievement sabotage is when you have something that's really working. Maybe you put in a marketing strategy that's really generating leads, but your creative brain can't stick with just what's working. So now you need to abandon that and start something new. When, you know, you had something that was generating revenue and now you've abandoned that and are starting from scratch with a new strategy. So that's what I see some of my clients do as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So the other place where new entrepreneurs struggle is in what you and I have talked about before is resistance. So one of the books that's also required reading in the Launch Lab, along with Stop Self-Sabotage, is The War of Art, right? So Stephen Pressfield talks about resistance and being an amateur versus being a professional. And I know you've done your own research on resistance. So what's the difference between resistance and sabotage?
Well, that's a really good question. And I'm not sure I have a really good answer for that. I view resistance as, if sabotage is the car, okay, resistance mm-hmm. is the gas.
Mm-hmm.
Resistance is how you operationalize that you're not going to meet your goals through self-sabotage. Sabotage, I view, is largely unconscious. Most people wouldn't do it consciously. If they really named it, if they really said, oh my gosh, I'm self-sabotaging at this moment. If they said that, they might stop, pivot, and do something different. But resistance is essentially a universal process. I mean, as he talks about in his book, Stephen Pressfield, which is a wonderful book, it's really, he talks about it in the form of art, but it's also a form of that there's a universality to resistance. Everybody hits their resistance. And in their ability to recognize that there is no just linear ascent to glory, you know, there mm-hmm. are pauses and stopping places along the way. I mean, your first company may not work. Your first relationship may not work. Your first attempt to get healthy may not work for whatever reason. So then you have to regroup and conquer your resistance to starting again. But, you know, the point about resistance is it's prevalent. It's ubiquitous. It's always there. It never sleeps. It never gives up. And your job is to conquer it every day. And the more you conquer it, the less power it has. So, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. Pat, you know, thank you. And in the show notes, we'll put a link to your podcast for sure, a link to your website. And again, just such a sincere pleasure to have the conversation with you today. Thanks for making time.
My pleasure indeed, Deb. Good luck to you. Okay. Bye-bye.
That's it for this show, my friends. See you next time. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.